Hey, honey, want to try something different this weekend?
Ooh, what do you have in mind?
Have you ever role-played before?
You mean like whips and all that other scary stuff?
Oh, no. I'm talking about rolling some dice and playing some Dungeons & Dragons. Or even trying something like a cool new board game or a collectible card game like Magic the Gathering.
Oh, that sounds way better than the other thing.
NobleKnight.com is your one-stop shop for all things role-playing, board, wargaming, and collectible card games. Noble Knight Games is committed to providing you with the best possible selection of new and used products with a selection of over 100,000. Everything on the site is in stock and ready to ship to you worldwide. Discounts are available, and you can expect reasonable prices for rare items. You can even sell or trade your stuff to them. NobleKnight.com, where out of print is available again.
So I can be the elf this time, right?
Oh, honey.
Throughout the ages, there have been heroes and warriors who have embarked on quests to save faraway lands and free the people from would-be conquerors. With dice and not a lot of common sense in various role-playing games. Today, our legends come from the halls of This Week in Geek. An unlikely group of nerdy adventurers armed with some pretty stupid ideas and a horseshoe up their butts come together to save the day in These Warriors Are Terrible. Seriously, these are the guys we're gonna go with?
Welcome back to These Warriors Are Terrible. This is our debrief. That's right, guys. We're going to talk about what happened with our latest Star Wars adventure, my second game mastering adventure here of These Warriors Are Terrible, with Star Wars West End Games 2nd Edition, where I've taken some of the homemade rules I found on the internet to create some rather interesting adversaries for my players. So tonight, in our debrief, we are joined by our board op,
dun, 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 dun. Justin Eacock.
And of course, co-host of Twig,
Steve Snowball Sailor.
And very special guest,
Erica Sabo.
And this asswife,
Julian Judas.
You
motherfucker.
You asshole.
So on that note, we are sponsored by NobleKnight.com, where out of print is available again. And of course, our good friends over at OffWorldDesigns.com. Fantastic t-shirt site if you happen to have the geek nerd in your family. All right, guys. So let's go around the table. What did you think of Star Wars meets Aliens? Did it work?
Yes. It works. I mean, I've heard sort of the kind of the fan fiction story idea of Star Wars mixed with Aliens, but I never actually read a full story of it. And I actually liked it a lot because I didn't expect it to be Aliens until we were face to face with them.
Yeah, I dug it. I think it probably was the most suspense I've ever had in a pen and paper campaign, and that like there was always a general threat to our existence at every turn.
Yeah.
And it did a good job. And I think something about that, the emptiness of space and the Aliens franchise and that fear blends well
with this
imperial regimented group, right? I mean, these are a group of people, the Empire, that you know runs everything by clockwork. So when things don't go right, it becomes extra scary.
Like even when we got onto the ship and we immediately knew, okay, no one's here, they're not responding to hails, the lights aren't working right, they weren't shooting properly, like they weren't even shooting with precision. We're like, this is wrong.
Yeah, I think it was
the Empire doesn't behave this way, and what could cause them to do this?
It was so freaky. It was like that kind of fear of the unknown. You don't know what's coming, but you know something bad is going to happen.
Yeah,
and it's really terrifying.
And it makes sense within Star Wars because they're at war with the Rebel Alliance. It's just like kind of like the Nazis. They'll invest in so much research.
Well, they just lost the Death Star. Like this is taking place just months after the Death Star was blown up. If they're willing to go to that length, I mean, of course they'd be willing to go to creating a super soldier alien genetic monster that exists only to kill and spread and breed and mutate. And galaxy long, long time ago, is that where they came from? Yeah. I'm okay with this. I mean,
better than Prometheus, anyway.
Way better than Prometheus. I'd much rather think that Darth Vader had a play in that.
I mean, part of the idea is, I very much had that whole kind of Nazi idea in that. In fact, you've pushed the Imperials to the wall.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if you read some of the expanded universe stuff, Darth Vader bombs a planet in the subjugation with a planet called the Falleen. If you guys have read Shadows of the Empire, Prince Xizor came from that planet.
Okay.
So I got to thinking, well, what if instead of using a weapon like a Star Destroyer to spread fear? What if you did a biological weapon where no one can escape?
Yeah.
And you get to watch the horrors unfold
live.
The
way I kind of always just sort of described, like, at least the Empire Rebel War, is basically once the first Death Star blew up, that was sort of like...
The gloves are off?
No, that was sort of like our version of World War II's D-Day. It was like, that was the deciding factor. It's like, okay, this is all going to be fucked up. And then the Germans and the Nazis.
That was the turning point.
It was the turning point. The Nazis were trying to think of anything to turn the tide back into their favor. Now, granted, I'm assuming that there would have been a lot more of experiments like this or similar to like anything. And then they were like, meanwhile, trying to build a second Death Star.
Yeah, I mean, Emperor Palpatine is known to be viciously anti-alien.
Yeah.
So that's why he was using alien. He's one of the toughest species from across the galaxy to crossbreed with the xenomorphs.
I'm surprised he didn't have any, like, any Gungams as the sort of alien.
I didn't want to have it too goofy, but well, I figured clearly, a Wookiee alien.
And you made it clear to us ahead of time that you were really only basing it off of the original trilogy work. You weren't even getting too much into expanded universe. You weren't certainly going to get into any of the Old Republic or the prequels. This was 4, 5, and 6.
Janos in his backstory was a Republic commando during the Old Republic days, but
the Old Republic.
Yeah, as things went forward, I'm like, you know what? These guys don't need my Game Master character. So that's why he faded from view after like the second episode. Because you guys really didn't need him. And I wasn't trying to railroad you guys into anything. But say, for every solution you had, like the hull problem, thinking, oh man, fuck, I better figure this one out quick.
Yeah.
No, wait, I don't have to. Star Wars canon tells me those hulls are really fucking thick.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. And I kind of want to ask, like, because we have two new players with us. So I want to ask Erica, what did you think of the whole session in general?
Oh my God. It totally caught me off guard. At first, you know, I didn't really know what to expect, but I think that by the second episode, I kind of like fell into the story and it just flew by, I swear. It was just so amazing and it just really caught me by surprise. So suspenseful. I mean, I'm just like cowering in my seat, you know, when we were facing the aliens. It was terrifying, you know, and you just want to live. And when you do, oh man, you feel so good.
Oh, totally.
You feel so good.
Yeah.
So it was awesome. It was really cool.
I mean, and just before Julian said, I mean, this was only my second time here with this group and doing TWAT, and it's so different when you are regimenting things to like a 1 hour thing and you're not taking breaks and you're not doing table talk. It's sort of like, this is how I kind of want to play now when I do, like, when I'm not taping a role playing game. Because it's kind of fun to have that sense of discipline to it that, you know, in just 4 hours, we had a beginning, middle, and an end, and we have finished really a campaign.
And it was great
evening. And it really, I don't know how you do it, but two times in a row now, you have started off things with a slow burn. You've established the world, and then by the fourth episode, I'm like going like, "There's no way that this is going to be like Shadowrun." And then, sure enough, last episode, it's the same gripping. It wasn't picture in picture because we were all together, but it's that same gripping. Like, we didn't know if we were going to make it out alive. Like, when we were walking into the last episode, Julian's telling me, like, I think we're all going to die.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're trapped inside this ship. We're surrounded by these aliens. We have no way of getting to the hangar, no way of getting to the reactor, no ammo, no guys who are really brave enough to help us out. What the fuck are we going to do? And then it was just sort of like, okay, the acid's eating through the floor, so we'll just go that way, see where it goes. And it was really... We're just kind of trusting that our dice rolls are just going to be just high enough that we won't dissolve.
Yeah, I was running through my head, like, every single point we could have made the wrong decision at that could have fucked us horribly. And I think I'm sure some of it was...
If you hadn't thought of creating a remote thermal detonator...
Yeah,
you know, how could we have actually destroyed it without leaving someone behind?
Yep.
To pull that trigger?
Yeah.
Right, like I was ready to do that to Twix. He ended up going crazy, anyways.
Well,
yeah,
he had to take shit out.
He kind of did something similar to that, but
you have to figure he lost all of his friends.
Exactly.
To this thing.
Yeah, yeah. So now, Julian, what was?
I was really trying to keep those stormtroopers alive with those dice rolls.
No, I know you were.
They all died.
What about you, Julian?
This is probably one of the tightest RPing campaigns ever, because as you said, Justin, there's no table talk. Everyone stayed in character for most of the time.
Yeah.
And it just kept going, which is great. Like, it kept moving forward, always at a great pace. It gave us a lot of opportunity to
improvise while still maintaining constraint within what the narrative that you wanted to set out, Mike. And I think, like, incredibly impressed with the depth of the world that you created, because, I mean, you know, the source material is huge, but it's just so much to work from, and it's felt like there was an answer to everything, which
and
was
you
great.
Still kept the world small. Like, when you do Star Wars, it's really easy to make this thing huge, big, epic, make it like Gladiator or Ben-Hur, make it huge, make it like where it's really going to change the course of everything. This wasn't. This was some Black Ops mission out in the edge of space, you know, way out in the outer rim. The rebels don't all know about it. The Empire doesn't all know about it. I mean, as much as there was a high body count, certainly in that opening battle that, you know, was so wicked, it was still very much a small microscopic view of the Galactic Civil War. You didn't tell a big story. You told a very big story in a small part of the galaxy.
Because what I wanted to do is I wanted to turn the Battle of Hoth in reverse. You guys started. You guys kicked the shit out of the Empire. And then by the end, neither kicks your ass.
Yeah.
Because this was a victory.
In a way, if you think about it, it was technically the Empire and the Rebels sort of fighting together to get out alive.
Yeah.
It's all survival at that point.
Exactly. Like, doesn't matter what allegiance you have at any point.
And I mean, I don't know if it was ever explicit, but I really got the feeling that 501st clone trooper, I mean, recognized the fact that I was an ex-recruit of my own who'd gone mercenary. I mean, the Empire doesn't forget crap like that. You know, my name would have been well-known. And I'm wearing old stormtrooper armor, right? You know, like, which in itself is a death penalty. So there was this moment where it's like a bit of a staring contest. It's like, we're going to have to put these troubles aside and deal with this tomorrow, because right now, if we decide to deal with this,
we're both
going to die.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to portray in TK 2600, the fact that, you know what, he may have a problem with you, but that doesn't matter when there's something breathing down your neck that's going to kill you.
Yeah, again, it's all,
survival. The lesser of two evils.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And I wanted to create this atmosphere of fear. Like, I wanted to create the emptiness of the ship, the fact that there were no bodies. Mm-hmm. There was only the after signs of battle.
Can I point out that I like the fact that I was playing a droid, coincidentally, in an Aliens crossover. I was the only, you know, android up here.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I also fucked you.
Okay, so, now explain
that. Do you
want
to tell us your backstory that you had decided? Like, who are you working for?
So I'll actually read out. I liked the way I worded this. So I'll actually read out the backstory of my character, because, you know, I didn't really touch on it. So A-92, I was trying to come up with a way to play an assassin droid that made sense without ripping off IG-88, because he was the only really well-known assassin droid in the 456
era. Next, of course, C-3PO.
Yes, C-3PO is a deadly marksman. So I looked up, you know, tried to rack the Star Wars canon for as cool assassin droids, and it turns out that there were these droids that were used in the Clone Wars called the A-Series. I'll actually just read what I wrote here. That A-92 was created alongside the other assassination droids that comprised Pollux Poi's personal bodyguard as part of a deal with the Shell Huts to eliminate the Gajali Kajitik back in 4000 BBY. Smaller and nimbler than the rest of its series, A-92 was designed to act as an infiltration unit to prepare the way for full-scale assaults by much larger, more heavily armed droids. Rendered aimless after the death of Poi during the Great Sith War, the droids migrated to the Great Enclave to operate as assassins. There they remained until in 21 BBY, Count Dooku purchased the droids, now in disrepair for use in the upcoming war. While the rest of the A-series droids were deployed routinely throughout the Clone Wars, A-92's diminished stature and infiltration programming were deemed useless to the war effort, and A-92 was left deactivated to gather dust in the holds of a high-security CIS warehouse until the rise of the Galactic Empire, when it, along with the entire facility, was shipped to Coruscant for inventory taking. As part of due diligence, A-92 was activated for functional inspection. Shortly after reactivation, he got triggered into a defensive state and murdered everybody.
And then
escaped to the lower levels of Coruscant, where he was operating as a mercenary for the crime lords down there. So the backstory here, I was trying to figure out why I would be in a rebel group with all these, you know, people who are sort of mercenaries, but generally fighting for the side of not evil. You know, when I'm doing deals with crime lords and stuff. So my feeling was that either I was a plant or a mole or someone working for a third party trying to gain information to gain the upper hand. And I was always operating with that in mind. I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it or if I was going to act on it. But once we got to the station, before we even figured out what it was, I was trying to concoct a plan of how I could separate the party and separate myself from Jeno because I was going to blow
betray
his
him?
I was going to blow his brains out and then tell you guys like, oh shit, they got Janos, and then I was going to like try and pull people apart one by one until I'd gotten enough information and samples and then gotten the fuck out of there. And then when he stayed behind the ship, I thought it was perfect. I could go do my thing and get back to the ship, but then it was another thing after another. So I set the bomb, hoping, you know, the thermal detonator, hoping that I would find a way to get away from you guys and then destroy the whole
like
fucking
thing.
Like
going through the hull and walking, doing an EV.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I probably would have followed you and you would have killed me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to do. And then I was going to take the rest. At every stage, I was trying to find ways in which I could betray everybody. And it almost worked. It almost worked.
Hey,
so.
Julian.
And then you saw your TIE fighter and you saw your way out. Well, and yet, despite all that, we still managed to escape.
And I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back to the ship either because I knew that there were xenomorphs on board, right?
So, because here's the thing: that's like by you escaping and that we got to escape. We know that you betrayed us, but to the actual group. You just kind of took off.
And you know what? Your motivation was there, but that last scene where you get ahead of the group and you get to the TIE fighter and Steve and I end up being stuck behind, have to free ourselves from those units and make a run to the hangar, that's luck.
Yeah.
You could not have planned for that. You just saw an opportunity and took it, and we were just sort of, by sheer luck and a little bit of skill and good dice rolls, managed to make it to the shuttle, fight off the queen, and escape as the ship was imploding.
Yeah, Erica might have made it, but Erica might have
died in that ship, and Steve's the only one who could pilot, and he was the last one in. So we wouldn't have been able to get that thing up and ready. We would have died in the explosion. It was a series of crazy events that all just sort of worked together, except for Craster, who is easily the most useless character I have ever played. until the very end, when I was able to start commanding those stormtroopers. It's like, oh, here we go. This is what he is.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it seems to be kind of a pattern with Twat, at least, that there is always going to be one character that is sort of captain ineffectual.
I lost count of the number of straight ones I rolled.
And there was a
3Ds out of 1, 1, 1, 1, 1.
Yeah.
Comparatively, I was only attacked once this entire campaign.
That's true. Yeah. Well, because I was thinking, like, okay, when we played Marvel, I was Captain America, was completely ineffectual the entire time. Shadowrun, I was
you were a powerhouse in the last episode of Shadowrun.
Oh, totally. Like, in the last episode. But that's the thing. It's like all throughout the entire, like, throughout the entire campaign, you become ineffectual. But then at the last minute, when it really counts, that's when we get to really kind of stand up and go through and do well.
It took me a bit. I mean, the truth is, I like Star Wars, but I don't know the mythos as well to create. And I was certainly playing a character type, which is just the soldier damage dealing guy, is not a character type I usually go to. I tend to go with the more fringe support role characters anyways, like the Wheelman in Shadowrun. But this was, I was trying to play a very different character type, so it was, there was a difficulty curve when the game began, and thankfully we had all those soldiers and you were happy enough to let me do some rolling and command them, and you guys let me sort of point them around and do that, and
they saved our asses. I mean, if it weren't for that E-Web, we would have been fucked.
The E-Web slowing them down at the very end, even Twix going in ahead of time and clearing the rooms for us and the elevator ride, they Craster, if I would play him again, I know now he's not a frontline fighter. He's not a lone soldier, a mercenary. He's actually a commander. And that's really where his strengths ended up coming out, was telling other people and giving them the courage to go forward and die for him.
He redeemed
himself.
Which is
really how everyone should live their lives, is dying for Craster.
Now, Eric, I wanted to ask you, because it seems as if throughout the whole entire thing that your character didn't really have a huge amount to do. You were kind of sort of just there as part of the story. I keep asking you this out of game, because I want to have all the players to come into Twat at least have fun, but have something that they're able to accomplish within the story. Were you okay with that?
Yeah. You know, I'm the same way as Justin in that I'm not as familiar with the mythos either. So I was trying to create more of a character that almost had that sense of naivete that I would have playing myself, learning through the experience. And I think that by the end, I mean, I felt like I really kicked ass by the end. At first, totally. I was like, well, I'm not really sure. You know, I don't know where this is going to take me. Mm-hmm. But I really fell into the role when I started relishing the fact that this is a very new experience for both just me, myself, and Rivik as well. And
well,
I like
you didn't
that.
Crash your swoop in the first episode.
Yeah, well.
And honestly, even though it didn't, I think, appear on the surface that you were playing an active role in the group, you were, I mean, you were critical. If we had lost you, we would have all died.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been able to get out. Like, you were, I mean, you weren't as frontline as Julian's character, mm-hmm. who was kind of stealing the spotlight, but at the same time misdirecting people. Mm-hmm. If we had lost you or had been cut off from you at any point, we would all have died. And that's... thank you for living.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I definitely would have to agree. Like, yeah, we would definitely not be dead. And so...
I mean, you did such a good job almost crashing her ship in the first episode, right?
I didn't almost crash.
You got rid of the hyperdrive. We had to ditch that ship for the rest of the game.
You're
talking shit about my ship, though.
Yeah.
That ship was a piece of crap held together by bailing wire.
Yeah, Ghost
and
Rebellion
duck.
Wasn't there for very long.
It saved your ass several times, might I point out.
I don't think it did at all. I was in that turret room and it almost killed me. I jumped into the swoop and it almost killed me. I actually wasn't safe until I was on my own with a bunch of stormtroopers.
There were several times where we shot stormtroopers that would have killed you. I'm just saying, but
No, the stormtroopers were killed by a falling Star Destroyer. Not you guys didn't do anything.
We did kind of discard you. I mean, and I know we say this kind of a lot of times we do these debriefs for TWOT. I know we sort of touched on. I love when we can be able to do these little short sessions because I mean, as much as I would love to be able to do a long, like keep the same characters for months on months kind of campaigns. There's just something about watching a whole story unfold from beginning to end, and you can still do a bit of our role playing. You can still build a game, and it does. That's what I love about this show so much is that I hope that you guys listening are enjoying it as much as we do playing it, because it's something that you can be able to within four episodes without even having to know anything about any of the RPGs that we're actually playing, be able to know a full story or hear a full story from beginning to end and not have to worry about I'm jumping in about 10 episodes later and they're playing the same characters they played 10 episodes ago. So I that's what I like about it.
Yeah, and I just hope that this, I mean, it's encouraged me. I mean, the days of the long-form Dungeons & Dragons campaign are past for me. That is something I could do in college, something I could do in high school. The friends that I played with, we still are in touch. We still do board games, but we can't meet. I've tried to start up groups, and it works like a week or two, maybe three sessions, and then it falls apart.
Busy adults.
We're busy adults. We have different schedules. We have different priorities. Things are changing. There's money. There's time. It's not practical anymore for me to do those long form campaigns, and it took me a bit to kind of get over that and be like, that's probably never going to happen again. But what this has done is I can still have the complete package campaign. I can still have a beginning and an end and have closure and play these games regularly, which is what I've been able to do. And it's not, this is a Saturday afternoon for us. I know it's been a month to listen at home, but this is a Saturday afternoon, and if you're listening, this is not like a huge commitment. We can we spend a lot of time preparing ahead of time before we record, but once we sit down, it's an afternoon.
Yeah, let's give Birdman hand here for all that
totally.
Preparation.
Yeah,
like,
thank you so much.
Yeah, you
can. But I mean, do this at home. You totally can. If you're in the same position as me and you can't do long form role playing anymore because you've got a life, you can still have a game day. And all you need is someone as dedicated as Mike who can weave together a really kick-ass story.
Or if you don't have any friends, you can just listen to These Warriors Are Terrible and roll dice along with us.
Like, oh my God, that would be awesome.
If you know the systems, yeah.
We were playing a game. We didn't record it, but it was like a trial run for a Dungeons & Dragons Delve, and a friend of ours tweeted in.
Yeah.
And I incorporated that into the game. And maybe if there's enough demand, we might live stream parts of this, put it on Ustream, and then people can tweet in as it's happening and have them affect the world.
And maybe have people who are like chatting into the stream can be able to at any given point or a certain point can be able to take over a certain NPC. Yeah. And this person roll a D6. what is it? And then just wait for, like, just get the response, and like that will be kind of, they could basically be the Game Master's NPC army.
I got a tangent idea. What about? I mean, that's amazing. What have you guys ever considered doing, like a charity stream for Child's Play or something like that, where you just marathon for an entire weekend a D&D session?
I actually do that every year. I call it Birdman Gives Back. But I do video games. This past year, I did all three Mass Effect games in 73 hours.
Nice.
Well, yeah.
I don't recommend doing that, by the way.
What about like this right here around the table where we just...
Our asses would get sore.
But you prepare... Like
a couple of adventures.
Maybe we don't get to them all, and maybe we get to them all too quickly, and you have to improvise the rest.
Yeah.
And we just keep playing until the money runs out.
Now, here's a question: mm-hmm. How much of this game do you think was improvised?
Now I wanted to get in there because I certainly want to ask you because we've all been giving our recollections and how we enjoyed our characters, how we enjoyed it. But I mean, we've got to talk to the guy who wrote the story here. How do you do the pacing, Mike? Like, I don't know how you pull it off.
Just kind of happens.
I can't wait to play your next game.
How much of it was improvised? How much?
About 95%.
Yeah.
Seriously? I have rough notes. I'm like, okay, I want this to happen.
Really?
And I'm thinking, okay, here's the set piece I want to have happen. How are they going to get there?
So what did you want to like with Shadowrun, you did the same thing. You told us the original story went way beyond the factory.
Yeah.
And we never made it out of the factory. So what was the original story for this campaign?
What you guys were going to do, you were going to crash the Star Destroyer into the sun to destroy all the weapons data. But the fact that Julian set the thermal detonator, I'm thinking, all right, I can use that. You guys are going to have a much longer, drawn-out fight with the Queen. Like, I wanted you to rush her with the AT-PTs and start booting the shit out of her. Like, I wanted this huge, epic showdown.
Robot curb stomp.
Yeah, like, I wanted her to be throwing you guys around in the machines.
You want us to use AT-PTs as power loaders?
Yeah! Like, I wanted you guys to have this epic showdown or have...
And you know what? We did have an epic showdown.
Yeah, we kind of did.
We did.
Yeah. You know, it's like that chase scene in like Super Meat Boy, or when you've played, if anyone played Castle Crashers, right? You're being chased by a giant cat.
Yep.
That's really basically what we were doing right there.
Yeah, or the boulder scenes in Crash Bandicoot. Yeah.
Or even just the big boulder in Indiana Jones. It's like, we gotta go.
The big boulder like that.
Grabbed the back of Steve and threw him to the wall and kept going past us.
I mean, the one part of the one that was vastly improvised was session one.
Really?
I knew I wanted the Battle of Hoth, but reversed. The swoop thing I made up right on the spot. Thinking, that sounds cool. Just so you guys could have that cool aerial scene. Like, I pictured a ship coming in, detaching two bikes, and then just going back up into the atmosphere.
Like dropping the Mako in Mass Effect.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Okay. Did you expect us to stay behind in the ship and pepper the planet with the fire?
I was hoping you would, because originally I was going to have you guys fight a walker that was controlled by the Imperials. But I'm thinking, let's use the walker instead and just have the Imperials be on the defensive for a change.
Yeah. Yes, I was really impressed by how quickly I crashed that swoop.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, I just made a wrong turn and rolled it.
Yeah,
like,
you very well could have died on that one.
I have beast riding as a skill.
You're mentioning, yes.
But trying to think of what else that
I'm
really
so glad. I'm so glad we got someone to interrogate, because I purposely picked torture as a skill. And I put, to pick torture as a skill, you have to have 5 dice in intimidation. So I purposely buffed up intimidation just so I could take torture.
And this is now, and you weren't here last time. This is 2 sessions in a row was a psychologically disturbing interrogation scene. This is now becoming a tradition for twat games.
It seems to be that my character is present for both of them. I don't know why.
Game Master, I get the psychos.
Yeah. Well, no, okay, so I want to ask you, Mike, so, like, was there anything that, like, hugely, like, drastically, because of us playing, what that had hugely drastically, like, changed your thinking? I had to switch this whole story.
What were the curveballs? What were the curveballs that we threw you?
I didn't expect you guys to go through the armory. Because I just kind of made that up on the spot. I thought you guys were thinking, fuck, it's going to be infected. Let's just keep moving.
But I had made the mistake when I created my character of not giving myself enough armaments. So I was really happy for that armory.
One of the curveballs I was going to throw you guys is I was going to have one of you guys get impregnated with a chest burster.
I would have killed my
cat. I knew it.
I would have been, because these games are so short for us, I would have been content with a character death. And I would have put a bullet in your head, or my head. I would have, no, I'm not having that happen to any of you, especially, the droid can die.
Yeah, without even actually knowing about the whole that it was going to be sort of aliens, was like when I saw the clue for me that I was like, okay, this is going to be bad, is when you said that there was a hole that was in one guy in the bridge that he burst from the inside out. I was like, oh shit, I need to seal myself up. I am not going to get killed. I didn't care if it was a bug, a virogen, anything. Yeah. I just
you
don't
went total
be...
Howie Mandel.
See, I was totally afraid. I was like telegraphing it too much. I was really afraid you guys knew right away.
And certainly maybe there are listeners who saw where it was going, but we were so wrapped up in our own characters, our own situation. Yeah. Certainly for the two of us, it was... We were sitting here going like, this is really creepy and wrong.
Well, I expected
wrong.
I expected mutants or something crazy, but I mean, I didn't expect a crossover because
I wasn't sure. Certainly there was the foreshadowing on the ammonia planet that, you know, they had these brain dead Wookiees and some had higher life expectancy than others. I was going like, what are they doing? Are they trying to genetically modify force sensitive creatures? Yeah. Are they trying to create like cyborgs? Like what are they doing? Are they grafting them to droids and trying to use like Wookiee brains like the Cybermen? Like what's going on here? And I had all these like scenarios going through my mind. And actually the last thing I was thinking right up until the alien showed up was aliens, like a straight out xenomorph.
Yeah, because I think the curveball that you threw at us that made us not think of the aliens too quickly was the fact that it was all on creature experimentation. It was all mutagen. It was all changing these races that we know, whether it's Wookiees or whatever. It's really like into this sort of medical experiments. Like we've seen that before in sci-fi movies, but we haven't really. I mean, aliens to a certain degree, but it was always this sort of that was always kind of like this different life form or different race altogether that was sort of that brought into the alien franchise. But with this, it was like that was the curveball. It was the experimentation, and somehow that turned into an alien, an extra alien race that we never seen before.
Yeah, like originally I was just going to have you guys fight a regular alien queen.
Yeah.
And then I was looking through the book with like a Rancor alien queen. Oh man, that'd be pretty fucking cool.
That would be cool.
Be really buff looking.
Yeah, I will say this actually, after playing all these little twats, because I've been in every single one of them. That I'm happy with, even the mini twats. I really want to, I want to try my hand at being a game master. I've never done it before in my entire life, and I am so afraid to try it. But I really want to try it.
Well,
and
give her hell, man. Yeah. Steve, you're the storyteller. I make shit up as I go along.
That's the thing. That's I am so worried about it. So I want to try it. Probably not for next show, but I really want to because I have a story in mind, and I want to play it. I really do. So
what do you think the trick is then for Steve here, if he's thinking, because I mean, I think Steve is worried that he's going to write so much detail into a story that he's going to have to chuck out the window instantly and improvise it all again. And if you're saying that 90% of the game that we just played was improvised, I mean, what is important when you're putting the game together? Is it
think
the story? Is it the world?
It's
is it
pacing.
Just... Is it the pacing? Is it knowing where all the paths go or just being prepared to just know your source material enough that you can pull things out of the ether?
That's pretty much it. I mean, you have to be adaptable. You have to listen to your players. And during the game, I'm watching each one of your faces, so I know when you're bored.
Because I wouldn't be able to do a Star Wars RPG simply because I would end up blanking on, like, fuck, what happens next? I don't know. I don't know enough about the material. I mean...
Like, when I do these games, I mean, Steve, you've been friends with me for, like, 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
You've seen me fast talk people.
Yeah.
This is basically fast talking for fun.
Well, that's one thing I am worried about, because, I mean, I don't have a huge improv skill, but, I mean, I can think on my feet to a certain degree, and that's one thing that I am worried about. I can come up with a story, and I can come up with a whole, like, beginning, middle, and end to it, but it's really just the thinking on my feet, and because I don't know a system that well enough to try it.
Well, here's some advice that I got.
You do, though. You're improvising with your character right here. You've done this twice now with your dwarf and with this that I've played you with, and you've done them both very well. You played your bounty hunter to a T. You played him. You didn't break that character. All his motivations worked. And the same thing with your mage dwarf in Shadowrun. You are improvising. You are thinking on your feet. You're just thinking on your feet for one character. The only difference is you're thinking on the feet of the world, not on an individual character. But it's just the world is a character. The story is a character.
And if you build a skeleton, like I found that, you know, when I'm game master, if you build a skeleton that's just kind of you know, touches on the points that you want to hit through the campaign. Like, you keep those in mind.
Right.
And you keep in mind, like,
points.
Like, for example, if I was game mastering this, and I think this is what Mike did too, I would make sure I know that Star Destroyer inside and fucking out, because that is the setting, right? Like,
yeah.
When a player says, okay, where am I going? I mean, some of it's making it up. You got to make sure it's consistent. But beyond that, I mean, we could have not even gone to the Leviathan, right? We could have been like, no, let's just check out something else. Fuck that.
Yeah,
like,
I would have just put the Leviathan on a different planet or something.
Yeah.
Like I was ready for you guys to throw me a curveball or something, and they're not going to go to the Star Destroyer. Okay, here's plan number two.
Sure, or we might not go to the research lab. We'll go to the barrier. We might not go to that. We'll go to the bridge. We might not go to the bridge. We might go straight to the reactor and just fight the queen right away.
There was one fight you guys missed because you cut through the floor. I was expecting you guys to go through the fresh water tank.
Yeah, you kept trying to lead us there. I heard it twice, and I was like, no, no. Fresh water tank,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, and I was picking up on that, and as soon as I was like, oh, well, we're heading down anyways. The hangar's down, the reactor core's down, and this acid's eaten through hull. So, Twix, go! And we just started, we did that, I think, two or three times, where we just went down instead of across.
Yeah, and I was really happy, because like the one fight I wanted to have is because no one ever takes swim.
No one ever takes swim. Especially in Star Wars. No one ever swims in Star Wars.
So that's what I was thinking. I was going to have you guys attacked underwater because you guys are in your suits. You're going to be so heavy, you're going to be sinking to the bottom anyhow. So that was going to be the plan.
Asshole. So what was going to be waiting for us in the water? Just more Xenomorphs?
More Xenomorphs.
So
and
be
your stormtroopers
3.
Were going to be picked off. That was the idea. Like, they were going to drown in their
Poor
suits.
Tom.
But yeah,
Poor
I mean...
Tom.
The
brain plucked out.
Like I said, originally the ship was going to crash into a sun and be melted that way to destroy all the research data. But now I've got a story hook. He's got the research data.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you guys ever want to pick this up again.
I
want to
continue this because I
love
my character.
And you know what? I really think the data you have that you're trying to go now sell is way too dangerous for you.
Yep.
And the people who...
Everyone's going to try and hunting me now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're not... The people, your buyer for that information is not going to want to touch it. Like, I don't think these crime syndicates on Coruscant are going to be like, holy shit, Imperial bioweapon of this magnitude. Like, they wouldn't have touched the Death Star plans with a 10-foot pole. And now you've got something that makes the Death Star look like a fucking BB gun.
Yep.
So, you know, you have just become the most dangerous droid in the galaxy. And there's going to be people who want this weapon, people who want to destroy this weapon. And...
And we're
the only three who know you.
And you're the only three that
know
it exists other than like Janice or Jano.
And actually might not shoot you on sight. Intentionally.
Yeah. Because you guys don't know that I betrayed you entirely. And yeah.
You don't know whether he was under command.
And you blew up the ship before we could leave.
We're not in good terms.
So. And then you didn't respond on the comm channel.
I did. I told you,
you gave us. You gave us how to save his life, and then never, and then drifted off at sublight speed somewhere else.
Here's my thinking: is that if we see you again, we're not going to automatically shoot first.
Yeah.
We're gonna have our blasters at the ready and be like, okay, what the fuck? Just explain yourself. Otherwise, you're going to get a bullet through the head.
Yep.
Or a blaster, whatever. Anyway.
I mean, overall, I'm really glad you guys had fun. I'm glad I was able to blend the universes, because I was really worried it wasn't going to feel like Star Wars. That's what I was most afraid of.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I'm afraid of, too. Like, basically, like, when I'm going to be GMing is it going to feel like it's the world that it's supposed to live in? And, and the pacing, because I could plan so much, but if we can only get to one certain section within the first hour, it's like, oh crap! Now I need to sort of make up as I go along, and I'm worried that it may not go over well.
Well, one of the things that I've learned from a very good game master friend of mine, Noah, aka Spoonie, start with a published module. There's a book for D&D. It's called Classic Dungeon Crawls.
So basically, kind of take our Dungeon Delves.
Yeah, Dungeon Delves do that, or even I've picked up modules for. There was one I did for its fourth edition, the Keep on the Shadowfell, and then that led, and then that hooked into the next module, which is the
the Thunder Spire Labyrinth. And then that hooked into the next one, which was about a pyramid or something. I never played it. And but I mean, I've got modules for Dark Sun campaign because I don't know Dark Sun as well. So I just use the module as a guide. And I still improvise from that and work with it. But if I ever get lost, I can always just go back and refer to that guide. And I DM'd a game in the Thunder Spire Labyrinth 4th edition, which was like their launch module that they did when 4th edition came out. And the village, the town hub that you work from is like this subterranean town, and it was peppered with all these great characters, but they were purposely left gray. Like, one of the great things with the good modules is they do leave enough fuzzy areas that you have to fill in. They don't fill in all the details of the map, so they leave room for you to add stuff to yourself. But, I mean, I don't know. Don't worry so much about your players ruining the world. We want to join your world. We want to be there. Yeah. We were all working with Mike to reinforce Star Wars.
We could have fucked off. Now, we could have been horrible players.
We kind of were fucking around and being horrible. Like, we weren't being good Force characters. We were doing some pretty dark things.
Yeah, but I'm not a Force character, nor am I a human.
And you know what? And none of us were actually, I think, rebels.
No.
We were all very much in it for our own reasons, and the rebels were a means to an end to, in my case, keep me safe, and in the rest, to keep you jobs.
Yeah.
And
there was always some money to be made with the rebels.
But, like, you know, when I play your game, Steve, I will be working with you to reinforce your world and to exploit it as a player, certainly, and throw you curveballs and test your limits as a storyteller. But I'm not going to try and break your world and be like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do a dungeon crawl. I want to do a noir investigation murder mystery. So I've had players who've done that where, you know, this is the mission.
Hey,
this
guys,
is what we're
I'll be
doing.
Right back. I really got to pee. I'm
he's
sorry.
Gotta, he's got to go pee. I've done missions where, you know, we're going somewhere, and instead of reinforcing the world, they decide, you know what, I'm going to like overthrow the mayor and take over the town and create an entirely new game.
Yeah.
And it's like the players on this show don't want to do that. We want to know what kind of story you have, and we want to kick your story's ass.
Yeah, I hate power players. I mean, like, it's such a pet peeve of mine, in that you're someone's DMing or GMing, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
They've come up with something that they want you to share with them.
If you don't want to play in their world, then don't fucking play
in
the game.
Just make up your own world then, if you're going to act like that and want to set your own rules. Right?
Yeah, so I mean, you have no trouble with us. We'll play along and we'll have fun.
Okay, good. All right.
We won't be jerks.
But if you do have player power players, it's important to call them out on that. And even like between sessions, that's like, you know what? You're doing tug of war with me. I need you to work with the world. And if you don't want to work with the team, then you're going to have to leave the quest, and we'll play something else. But you know, I've that's what I had to do with this one player who wanted to wrestle control of the town and do that. Is I was like, fine, you've been cut off from the party, so we're going to do your story as a set of off-screen dice rolls, and we're going to play this quest over here. You aren't going to be part of the game until you're done with all this. We're going to have to go through all these dice rolls, and we'll come back to you every 10 minutes. We'll just roll another dice and see how you progress. We're not actually going to play that anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the team left and went back to the dungeon and continued on with the quest to stop the fucking world from ending, and then he ended up becoming mayor and being usurped and running off I was doing a bunch of random dice rolls and be like, okay, well, now you're running through a forest and you just got attacked by the bees, wolves, and more bees. And that was it. And so they came across him. He's got like his foot in a beehive, and he's like, you should never have left your group. This isn't working out for me. And you've got to wrestle them back down. But if they're not going to play in your world, then just cut them out.
Okay.
You know, don't play their game. The good player will want to reinforce the world you want to play in, and most players you'll play with want that. They're playing the Star Wars role playing game for a reason. They're playing Shadowrun for a reason. I wanted to learn more about Star Wars, and the easiest way to learn more about Star Wars is hang out with Star Wars fans and play a Star Wars game.
That's true.
You know,
hey, totally random. Has anyone ever thought of doing a Dark Sun Stargate crossover? Has that been done? Because that would just so make sense.
Probably somewhere out there.
I haven't heard anything, but that would be pretty fun to do.
Because Dark Sun is basically Magic Stargate.
Right.
Magic Mad Max.
Yeah.
So here's another sort of DM question then. So can you take basically a module, and can you be able to sort of modify it on your own, like add scenes here and there that doesn't exist within this module?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Because your players are bound to do something you don't expect.
Okay.
Everything in a module is written in pencil. I mean, you buy that module and you have a look at it, and they're all suggestions. They're just there to help you craft a story. You can follow it by the letter. Some of them will give you dialogue that you can read to the players, or things that people will say when they ask the right question. You don't have to read those. You can make up your own dialogue. You can come up with your own descriptions. You come up with your own room. You don't like that character, you can rewrite that character. I had so many characters in Thunderspire that I made more colorful, and I made them interesting, and they ended up becoming focus points and like actual hinges on the story that were never intended in the original module. But I mean, you take that and you use that as your muse, you know, as your blueprint, the skeleton that Julian was talking about, so that you... If you get lost, you have a map to go back to. But it's your story. You can do whatever you want.
Hmm. Okay. I think I may need to try this. And soon.
Well, one of the things, Steve, I really recommend, I was saying before I had to go pee, go on YouTube, look up Noah Antweiler's Counter Monkey.
Yeah.
And he has three episodes called How to DM a Great Game, How to Start into Role Playing, and the Bardic Knox Spell.
Okay.
Watch those episodes. It'll give you an idea on how to create a campaign and how to carry one forward. In fact, just watch everything he does on Counter Monkey, because there's stories of role-playing do's and don'ts, things he's done, and, you know, what not to do sometimes. Sometimes they're just entertaining damn stories. And that's how I've gotten back into RPGing, is just watching this type of shit and just being adaptable to make stuff up as I go along.
Okay. All right. Because one of the goals I wanted to make with WoW was that I would become – I would love to, as a side thing, I've always kind of had this in the back of my head, even when I first started playing RPGs, when I first heard about modules, is I would love to be able to
write one
and – Whether it's a brand new RPG that's never existed before, or if it's an existing one that I could either sell or be a part, with four twat specifically. Yeah. So I wanted to get back into playing again because I hadn't played in so long. I'm still relatively new to this, even though I'm now beyond the basics of D&D, or at least of role playing, and now I'm kind of into the intermediate. Somewhat getting into it at the advanced level, so I'm looking forward to expanding myself as a player.
Oh, but you're already more advanced than most of the players I've played with.
Oh, that's
just
good.
Just wanted to tell you that. And you know, if you want to write a module, buy a module and DM from a module. It's the same, like, you know, can you make music if you've never listened to music? Can you write a book if you've never read a book? Maybe, but it's certainly going to be a lot easier if you're well-read to then go and write a novel. And the same way, you know, if you want to write a module for a game, brilliant. Go buy some modules. And, I mean, 90% of the games I've dungeon mastered have been from a module. And then I improvise the details, but the core of the gameplay is decided by the module in terms of who the big bad is going to be and the major quest and waypoints they have to reach.
Okay.
And if they end up fucking it all up, then I'll improvise. But it's a lot easier to improvise if you've got a module that's already written for you.
The other thing you can do, too, I mean, you know, you are a writer and you are a kind of adept at crafting stories. So the other thing you can do is you can write a setting and a place and, you know, and then just to work with one of us or another friend to assign a rule set to it that makes sense.
Okay.
And then work from there. But it's a lot more work, right? Because you're building everything as opposed to building off of skeletons. But it might, you know, say you want to do something really weird, like a, you know, out of time, things happen in different orders, like, you know, asynchronous orders.
Yeah.
And, like, you're playing with, you know, you could be doing crazy things like that.
The idea I have, I mean, the original story idea, at least for my thinking of DMing, was in the Star Trek universe, because I love that universe and I would love to be able to do it a twat on that. But my thinking is after looking through, because I just got to look at the Next Generation RPG book today, in my just from even Mike telling me, it's very intense and complex, and I kind of want to start off like I want to still do that story, but I don't think I could be able to do it in that complex of a system. I want to do something like, say, like a D20 simple, that it's just I can easily get into it. I can craft these different story elements, but using the other systems that are simpler for other people to get into and for myself to DM it. Like, is that sort of the way to maybe go about it?
Sure.
Like,
yeah. I mean, you could probably even take what we just did with Star Wars and adapt that to a Star Trek world, and just, you have to work much more closely with the players when they're making their characters. They're not going to be able to do them on their own because they're not going to have any books to work off of. I mean, in the same way, like, you would have a module, we need the rule books to look at the equipment and the skills and stuff.
Although you could totally apply this exact D6 system to Star Trek.
D6 is so flexible.
You can actually apply this to anything you want.
I actually have to say, I like this version of D6. Probably one of the best I've ever
because,
played.
Yeah, and D6 is now under the open game license.
Yes, is it is. Really?
And you know what? There might already be a Star Trek D6 out there. You might not have just searched
for
it.
When I wanted to make your Black Shadow RPG, this was the skeleton.
This is the system?
Yeah. You just have to learn.
I love using the D20 system because that is a fun, like,
D20 I find is overly complicated for no reason.
It is complicated, yeah, but I do like this playing D6s, it was so much easier for me to be able to grasp. It's like, okay, you know what? No matter how many die you have, you always have to have one wild die, and it was simple. If you roll a one, it's terrible things going to happen. You roll a six, keep rolling until you get more.
Now, one of the house rules I used to play with when I was a kid is every time you get a six, roll it again.
Yeah.
I could have done that for you guys.
Not just on any six.
Oh,
I'm going to make this game a little bit more lethal.
Okay,
well,
you know what?
The dice generator on my iPhone for Shadowrun is exactly how they ran that.
Yeah.
By default. And it was sort of, you know, maybe that's not a house rule. Maybe that's how a lot of people play it.
Yeah, I mean,
if that's how you play it, send us a tweet.
I mean,
okay. Well,
I'm really glad, though, you guys got a chance to really experience different rules. And that's something what I like about TWAT, too.
Yeah.
Now I have to break out of my comfort zone
and try different styles.
I'm probably going to try Rifts.
Okay.
I might do Rifts.
I like to try GURPS at some point because I never played a GURPS.
Yeah, and I've got so many different rule sets for that.
Yeah.
Well, and GURPS is interesting as well because they have tech levels, so you can set GURPS in different eras with different technologies. So you have like super future, prehistoric,
and
past.
You can add powers
and
you can transfer between them.
So you can have someone like a Cable come in from the future and bring with him all that knowledge and skills into a present day setting, and so he'd be like tech level six.
Guys, let's play battle tech RP.
Okay, you know what? Let's do this. I think
playing Ghost Bear, baby.
I think, you know what? I'm going to say this right now. I think with the people that live in Toronto, because we're sort of considering as far as the future of TWAT. I kind of want to say it. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. We want to expand out and you guys haven't heard it yet, but we do have sort of a Toronto TWAT crew. And we want to be able to maybe expand out the emergency TWAT systems. You haven't heard those yet, but they are coming just in case if we need an extra week here and there, you'll hear these mini TWATs or the emergency broadcast TWAT system. And there's just the little dungeon delves that the Toronto crew will play. So, and Julian is a part of that. Justin's a part of that. So, and now Erica is a part of that. So I want to expand it out so that you're going to get more TWATs. Maybe instead of just once a week, we might move to two. We don't know. We're still not 100% sure because we really want to expand this out. But we want to hear from you too, as the audience. I mean, we don't get a huge amount of feedback, but we want to hear from you.
I mostly get feedback via my personal Facebook.
Right. So yeah, I do get a little bit of that. If you want to be involved or if you want to kind of give your opinions, this is what you would love to hear, not just in RPG systems, but love to hear a TWAT sort of a different direction to take, whether it be a charity live stream or just a live stream in general or whichever. If you want to get involved, feedback@thisweekingeek.net, put somewhere in the subject line TWAT, and we'll read it, and we're going to look at all the suggestions for this.
And I think part of it, I mean, as the outsider, it's any good gaming group I've ever been a part of ends up getting big because more people want to be involved in it. And I was so happy to be invited to play in Shadowrun, but that was a really big group. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to break up that group. You've got great chemistry and everything. I was listening to it and it sounds a lot of fun. It was really intense, but it was also really noisy. And there was a lot of voices overlapping each other. It was kind of, if I didn't know the people from their faces, I probably would have felt a little lost. The benefit, I think, of Steve's idea of doing a Toronto mini twat crew.
And, a toe twat.
A toe twat.
Toe twat.
Toe twat.
Camel twat. That's
all we're going to call that. And doing those is... we can still have the quality of gameplay that TWAT has really figured out how to do. Like, it's such a good format, but also still keep the players to four, which is a really sweet, you know.
Yeah, I think four TWAT would be established, and then monthly TWAT is whoever we can get.
Exactly. I think four core people in a session plus a DM it seems to work well. I mean, I assume with everybody here, it was worked okay.
It was great.
Four-part party.
The pacing was great because it didn't drag on.
Right.
It didn't get distracting or anything either.
But I meant to ask you, Mike, you last campaigned as the DM for Shadowrun, and how many? We had six players?
Yeah.
And then you just did a very similar pacing with a similar finale and intensity, but with only four players. I mean, what do you, like, what did you prefer? Was it too much to control for Shadowrun? Was it kind of fun?
It was a little too much because I felt like some of them didn't have nearly enough to do. With this is perfect. If I can do four, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because I know exactly where I'm going and what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, and you can give a little bit more attention to each individual player.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I felt everybody had their moment to shine tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's what I was trying to do with it. So
good. All right.
So next month you'll hear Big Mike back in the chair.
Yes, we're going to, I think we're doing Pendragon is the next
Pendragon.
One.
Yeah, Pendragon. So it's like Arthurian legend. Then after that, I don't know. I mean,
who knows? Maybe I'll be DMing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Could be Steve by that time.
Yeah. Hopefully.
So it could be Battletech, Vampire, Mage, Rift, Ninja Turtles.
Paranoia.
Paranoia.
Oh, yeah, there is that too. Yeah. All right.
Your message from your friendly computer.
All right. So on that note, guys, my wife is waiting for me downstairs, so I got to go. So for this week in Geeks, these Warriors Are Terrible, brought to you by NobleKnight.com and OffWorldDesigns.com and many of our other sponsors, we have been
Justin, Mr. Eacock,
Steve Snowball Sailor,
Erica Sabo,
Jawa Julian,
and I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, may you always roll a natural 20.
Nice.
You have just listened to This Week in Geeks. These Warriors Are Terrible. Did our terrible warriors succeed in saving the day? Did someone do something completely insane and stun the GM into a stupefied silence? And lastly, did someone get punched square in the goodie bags? Also, are there any settings or RPG systems you'd like the terrible warriors to visit? Do you have your own shameful, awesome, or just plain silly RPG adventures? Tell us with a comment on this episode post or email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Until next time, geeks and gamers, the dice has been put away, the books back on the shelf, and the Cheetos stuck to the floor. For these warriors are terrible!